Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We welcome Matthew Collar back onto the program, courtesy of the John Schuster Coal Banker Hotline, the Purple Insider himself, to talk Vikings football as we do each and every Thursday at 7:05. How you doing, Matthew?
Oh, it's been a week, man.
It has been.
Been a little bit of a stressful week, I think.
I saw Matthew in the press box on Sunday. I'll go to 3 games a year, I would say, and then the rest of them I'll just kind of watch like the average Minnesota Viking fan will. But I was happy to be there. I was not happy with what I saw. That was ugly. That was an ugly game by both teams. It just was not fun to watch. We'll start with the fact of, I know that J.J. McCarthy now is injured, the high ankle sprain, but out of the 8 quarters of quarterback play, how would you look at his performance to this point?
I would say that he looked like about as much of a rookie quarterback as you can look like, and I know that I was the one in the offseason that said, hey, you know, it's not really fair to call him a rookie when he's had a whole season in an NFL building and 2 training camps. But there's no way to simulate the actual speed of an NFL game, because if you have a joint practice, those guys are going hard. Are they going as hard as they are on Sunday Night Football? No. Are they game planning for you based on all the tendencies of your offense and your weaknesses and all those things? No. So I think that he really showed his inexperience, and the biggest evidence of that, I think, the smoking gun is that the football has just not come out of his hands, that he had one of the slowest snap to releases in the NFL in week 2. And I think that some of that had to also do with the fact that Raheem Morris understands some of Kevin O'Connell's weaknesses. I mean, they were with the Rams at the same time, and they know each other well. And I think that the Falcons understood exactly where to attack the Vikings. And it's very hard to start your career without your superstar left tackle. And anybody who ever questions, not that Vikings fans do, but the value of some of those offensive linemen, I think you saw it in these first 2 games. So there was a lot that went wrong for J.J. McCarthy. Clearly, I mean, if he doesn't have that 4th quarter comeback, you know, I think you're really talking about a lot of panic. That's the kind of thing everyone's holding on to. But there's no way to say it was good. It was not a good 2 games for J.J. McCarthy to start his career.
I agree with you. And let's put the ankle injury aside and assume that he's going to get healthy in the next couple of weeks, hopefully. Does this change your expectations for the team?
Yes. Yes, it does. Coming out of the last game, I think I said, you know, I think they'll still be able to turn this around and they'll still be the team we thought. They just need to get a little bit healthier. They need to get Darisaw back. They need, you know, X, Y, and Z. They need to figure out what McCarthy can see out there. And they need to figure out how they're going to adjust some of the protection to help him and, you know, pare some things down, I think. But I still thought, well, you know, he can get it, right? He's got the work ethic. He's got the tough mentality. Like, I think he can get it. But then with an injury, now you're talking about when is he supposed to develop, right? I mean, he has just not had any chance to actually play real football. And this is one time where I did question Kevin O'Connell a little bit. Now, I've never believed in playing starters in the preseason, but I thought if anybody needs to be out there, it's probably J.J. McCarthy putting on a real helmet and real shoulder pads and actually going and playing a game. But then if he had gotten hurt in those games, everyone would have said KOC was wrong, right? So I think that sets him back. My confidence in Carson Wentz that he could play better is very high. That he could play consistently well is not very high. I don't think this is Sam Darnold. I don't think they're 2 guys in the same spot in their career. So I think the expectations have changed to now it's going to be a real fight to even get to the playoffs, and who's getting you there at quarterback is very much in the air.
Talking to Matthew Collar, the Purple Insider here on the Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. where do I go next? We have to talk about this offensive line. How did you grade out this offensive line and how they did against Atlanta? Because that was a rough watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would get, you know, a D-minus grade or worse in that game. The one thing I will say is that if you have a veteran quarterback who could set the protections a little bit better, once Ryan Kelly goes out, I mean, at least he was able to fix things if McCarthy was setting the protection wrong, but that's not the case for Michael Juergens. I mean, the way I look at it is I don't know what offensive line in the NFL would look good with two backups that are supposed to be filled by stars and then with a young quarterback who doesn't know what he's doing, who is also holding on to the ball too long. Like, that to me is a perfect recipe. And at the same time, I think Kevin O'Connell makes it very hard on his offensive linemen. I mean, he throws the ball all the time, and he asks his quarterbacks to be in shotgun. And, you know, when the strip sack happens, that was one that really, really got me. And again, I'm usually a big defender of the play calling, right? That to me is usually just based on whether fans are mad or not. But, you know, they were in a position late in that game to maybe go and score and then change how it was going to work out. And they run an empty protection, meaning just five guys up there blocking. And it's like, come on, man. I mean, it's just like that's you think this offensive line at this point is going to be able to block that up. And of course, they sent an extra guy. They got home. They get the strip sack. Totally changes the game. So, you know, I think it's been a little bit of everything, but injuries, there's just no way to make Michael Juergens, a seventh round pick who's never played before, into Ryan Kelly.
You know, one of the things that was a theme, and look, I was sitting there watching it just like you. You know, the defense gave up a lot more yardage from a running, you know, rushing perspective than I thought that they would. I know that Bijan Robinson's unbelievable and he's extremely talented. But I think a lot of people were kind of like looking at that and they're like, man, look at this defense. I'm a little bit less surprised just because of the injuries that they had going into it. Were you?
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I also think that offense affects defense. And a lot of times in NFL analysis, we don't act like that's the case. We'll just be like, oh, their defense is ranked this and their offense is ranked this. And I'm sure there's no connection. There is. When you're on the field for less than 100 plays in 2 weeks, your defense is going to get pretty well beat down. If you're playing from behind all the time because your offense can't score, again, it's like you're just going to get worn down. I thought in the middle part of that game, they were pretty darn good. They got, you know, a few runs ripped off on them early in the game, and then it seemed like they adjusted a little bit. I thought they did a good job against Penix. They sacked him a couple more times than most teams do. They pressured him, I think, 40% of his dropbacks. So they did their job up there. But if you're going to have to stop the run for 40 carries because your offense can't do anything and the other team is winding the clock down, you're going to give up 200 a lot of times when you have a running back of that caliber. That doesn't mean everything was okay and perfectly fine, but in the fourth quarter, you're looking at 12 points on the board against the defense. I mean, you got to win that game. If that's what, you know, the point total is for the defense, you can't say enough about how good Blake Cashman is and how much he means, though. Because I think a lot of the idea of the run defense was built around that Blake Cashman will just clean up everything. That if guys are getting beat, guys are getting pushed around, he's going to rally the ball and make the tackle, which he's so good at. Eric Wilson, great player, ton of respect for him. He's not a starter for a reason, right? I mean, there's just no replacing. That's the problem with all the guys that are hurt. There's no replacing Darisaw. There's no replacing Kelly. These are the best players in the league. There's no replacing Van Ginkle. And I thought, you know, Dallas Turner had his moments. He got a sack. He had another pressure that was impressive. But he also got thrown around like a guy who hasn't played a lot in the league before. And that's just hard to overcome when you got to be out there for as many snaps as he did.
We're not the only team that's dealing with issues at quarterback. The Cincinnati Bengals are in a better position, but clearly the news that broke, and it was the biggest story on Sunday, Joe Burrow out with the toe injury, and it looks like he's having surgery tomorrow and is going to potentially be out for 3 months. Talk a little bit about what you think of their backup in Jake Browning, because we've seen him have some success.
Yeah, I'm a real Jake Browning enjoyer, because this guy worked his tail off for the Minnesota Vikings as an undrafted quarterback. And if I remember correctly, the story was something like Zimmer wanted to keep him, but Spielman wanted to cut him out of spite or something. I don't remember. It was some nonsense like that between those two, and was sort of a sign of the times in 2021. But, you know, Browning is a really, really smart guy and works extremely hard, very competitive. He has no arm talent whatsoever. Like, he cannot fire the ball into tight windows. He's not accurate. But, man, the guy is going to work his butt off, and he's going to give you a chance and execute the offense. And so this is not a quarterback you can just say, ah, well, LOL, it's Jake Browning. Like, he can get you. He can drop something in the bucket down the field. He can execute short and underneath passes. He gets rid of the football. I think this offense has the passing weapons to do something. It's really, though, they don't have a very good offensive line, and they really don't have a run game. It's not Bijan Robinson back there, that's for sure. So they should be able to turn the ball over a couple times on Jake Browning. If they could do that, they need to win. But if they, you know, if they let him complete short little passes to Ja'Marr Chase, eventually that'll kind of be like a run game and they'll break one. This is just not a quarterback to go into the game and think that he's just a joke because he's QB2.
How do you feel about the matchup overall? Vikings, I think, are favored by what? Was it 1.5, 2?
In some places I saw 3, but it might be in that area. I mean, this is as much of a coin flip and a who knows. I mean, these are teams looking in the mirror. They both got a lot of problems. They both got some injuries that are really hurting them. They both got backup quarterbacks. They also both have a lot of good, damn good players. I mean, Trey Hendrickson is unbelievable, and Chase and Higgins, and the same thing goes for, you know, Jefferson and Grenard. There's enough talent on the field for this to be a fun football game. There's enough problems for this to be a hideous football game. And I have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, Carson Wentz could look great. He could look horrendous. I mean, how can we even begin? It's hard enough to predict what good quarterbacks are going to look like, much less a couple of backups.
So, no prediction?
I'll say the Vikings win, but they
you're not
need,
saying with
they
the confidence,
need
yeah.
to win. They need to, yeah, the confidence level is low.
Yeah.
But I would lean a little toward them because they're at home. I think that gives them a little bit of an advantage, and I think Wentz is less likely to turn the ball over than Jake Browning, which could make a difference. But, I mean, who knows, man? I mean, it's like, how fast did this go from, you know, we're talking last week before the game, it's like McCarthy, you know, comes through the game-winning drive, you know, he's not rattled and great job, and then all of a sudden it is a completely different conversation 1 week later.
I'm with you. Hey, Matthew, always a pleasure, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me, Henry.
All right, take care. That's Matthew Cowler. Check out his fine work at the Purple Insider. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll get to Bite of the Night. That's next year on The Lake Show.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, this Bite of the Night is one that I think that most Minnesotans will look at and have a certain feeling about, because it does have to do with us, and it does involve President Donald Trump. The Bite of the Night is when the question was asked about, because everybody knows about the flags being lowered for Charlie Kirk. In this segment, it's not about disputing that or whatever. However you want to feel about that is however you want to feel about that. But do you think it would have been fitting to lower the flags for Melissa Hortman, who was killed as well?
Kirk. Right. Do you think it would have been fitting to lower the flags to half staff when Melissa Hortman, the Minnesota House Speaker, was gunned down by an assassin as well?
I'm not familiar.
The Minnesota House Speaker, a Democrat, was assassinated this summer.
Well, if the governor had asked me to do that, I would have done that. But the governor of Minnesota didn't ask me. I didn't. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I would have if somebody had asked me. People make requests for the lowering of flag, and oftentimes you have to say no because it would be a lot of lowering. The flag would never be up. Had the governor of Minnesota asked me to do that, I would have done that gladly.
The Governor Walz should not have had to ask Donald Trump to lower the flags. He didn't need Governor Walz to make that request. The I understand. I think the only thing out of the point that he made was if every request I got was about lowering the flag, that we'd have him lower it all the time. I totally get that. That's not this.
Mm-mm.
He knows damn well that this is not an everyday occurrence where politicians at their home are assassinated. So stop with the nonsense about if it was given. You don't need a request from Governor Walz to do this, number one. It would have been the right thing to do. We cannot continue to live in a world in which we're doing things to honor people just based on their politics. We can't do that, and we shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Now, I would like to think that we are better than that, because we say all the time, "Well, this isn't who we are." No, this is exactly who we are.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Anybody that says, "Well, that's not who we are," no, we are who we show ourselves to be.
Yes.
And whether or not we want to admit it, this is who we are. And at the end of the day, we need to just accept the fact that we are a society that is having issues just coexisting at this point. I think what annoys me about that clip is I'm not familiar. No, you are very familiar with this situation. You know exactly who Melissa Hortman was. You know why you didn't call the governor, because you were asked about it and you said, "Why should I call him? I think he's nuts. I think he's a mess." So you insulted Tim Walz because you didn't want to acknowledge Democratic lawmakers were killed. So the whole "I'm not familiar," it rings so hollow.
This is disrespectful.
It is very disrespectful. And to your point, you shouldn't have to ask for things to be lowered.
And I think that everybody with half of a brain understands that.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Nobody is asking, "Hey, you know what? My cat died. Can you put the, you know, I called him Trumpy Cat. You know, can you lower the flag?" This is just a ridiculous premise. And we talk about dividing, and we talk about, you know, lowering the temperature. We need to have a genuine desire for compassion for people that don't share the same political beliefs. If we have that genuine compassion and we're not pitting us versus them, that's all it's ever been with Donald Trump, is us versus them. Why can't you just extend some empathy? I know it's a dirty word. I know it's a word that shows weakness. But why can't you just show compassion for a human being? Two of them that were killed.
And I know what you mean by that, like in terms of showing weakness. It's not actually weakness, but I get what you're saying. Is that Tim Pawlenty on CNN?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Hmm. And the reason I say that it's weakness is because...
I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
I was poking fun. Now,
terms of how he deals with stuff and how he perceives himself.
Yeah, yes. And it kind of goes back, and I know I'm going to upset the Charlie Kirk truthers out there, the stands out there, but empathy was a word that Charlie Kirk didn't believe in. And those were his own words. And I think empathy is a word that is missing a lot in society. And it is just very, very sad that empathy is not weakness, but empathy is not a dirty word.
No, it's
not. And you know, on the text line, Trump knew exactly who she was. It was strictly political, 100%. This was all political. You wanted it down for Charlie Kirk because he's a podcaster. Here's the thing about it. I understand.
Well, he supports Donald Trump.
He supports Donald Trump, yes. But Charlie Kirk was a podcaster. He was a member of the media. Like, he was very, very good at his job. Absolutely, again, for the thousandth time, should not have been assassinated. He should be here today, whether you agree with him, whether you don't. But to have the flags lowered for someone that was not a government official, to me, there, no matter what you're doing, if you are not a government official, I have a hard time with the justification of saying it's okay here, but it's not okay there. I don't know. That's kind of what rubs me the wrong way.
I just, Yeah, man. It's a struggle, man. It really is. It just, I'm not familiar with Melissa Hortman. That's a slap in the face.
That's just so disrespectful.
That's a slap in the face.
That is absolutely.
That bothers
me. A slap in the face. You know who these people are. If it was a Republican Speaker of the House in a red state, you damn well know that Donald Trump would know exactly who it is. It would be a completely different thing. It is 100% political when it should not be. It is a decency issue.
The Minnesota Lynx have advanced out of the first round of the WNBA playoffs. They are awaiting their next opponent. We will find out who that is tomorrow. They'll find out who the winner will be between the New York Liberty and the Phoenix Mercury. But joining us to talk about the Lynx and an award that was given out earlier today that involved a member of the Lynx, Sloan Martin, voice of the Lynx. He joins us next. All right, the Minnesota Lynx get the victory last night. They finish off. Golden State. Joining us now, the voice of the Lynx, Sloan Martin. She joins us courtesy of the John Schuster Call Banker Hotline. Sloan, first off, before we get into the game itself, man, tell me about that atmosphere last night, because it looked amazing.
It was amazing, and this was my now third time sitting in a Golden State home game. So this was actually in San Jose, because there was a long already scheduled tennis tournament inside Chase Center. I'm not sure if that had anything to do with not expecting an expansion team to actually make the playoffs. So there was a conflict there. We were at San Jose, the home of the Sharks, and you would not be able to know. It was cloaked in lavender, although I guess they call it violet. And you didn't see any turquoise there in the building at all. And it was ruckus. And from the very moment the Lynx came in, there were loud boos raining down. This is a really invested fan base. And I still remember Courtney Williams. She's putting her hand up to her ear like, okay, come on, let me hear it. She is the exact kind of person who really gets fueled by that. And I thought it just set a tone from the beginning of a playoff atmosphere and fans who were really, really engaged.
Yeah, it looked, you could tell on TV that it looked like it was just an absolute blast to be at that game. Now, with that being said, one of the things that concerns me about the Lynx, and actually me and you had this conversation in the summertime, is the slow starts. I get it, they rebounded, they came all the way back, they got the victory last night by 1 point, but I am concerned as they continue to progress and go through this this postseason about the slow starts.
It is something that has been a really common theme throughout this season. I mean, I'm even looking at, their scoring margins this season, where their best quarter is the third quarter. They're outscoring teams by 4 points per game throughout this entire season. Now, it is positive in the first quarter and the second quarter as well, but it's just under two for both of those. And it's one of those things, and Coach Reeve has talked about it as well, where it's just something that has come with the territory this season. But really, it's been more so the way this team has responded in the second half, Henry, has been remarkable to watch time and time again. The way that they're just able to regroup no matter the circumstances, no matter where they are. And, I mean, no better example than what we just saw against Golden State, where really nothing was going their way. And somehow they can just pull it all together so many times. They've had 11 come-from-behind victories this season. Of course, that being the largest of all.
You know, one of the things that I'm happy to talk about tonight, because I am the biggest fan, as you know, is that Alana Smith was named Co-Defensive Player of the Year with A.J. Wilson from the Las Vegas Aces, which I actually think that that bodes well for maybe Nafisa Collier being the MVP. We'll see how that kind of plays out here. But just talk about Smith and her season, because, you know, I do have the Lynx crush on her. But that aside, she is a tremendous basketball player who I think is very underrated for how versatile her game is.
Oh, she's extremely underrated. I mean, she personifies that to me, someone who is playing out of position. So she is always undersized, but never overmatched in whoever she's facing. And she faces some of the superstars in the league, some of the best post players in the WNBA. She's playing the five as someone who's just about 6'3" and doesn't have a lot of girth to her. And it's because of her IQ and because of her hard work that it's just unmatched. And her teammates just talk over and over again. I refer to her as, and this is also pulling from things they have said too, she's the anchor of this defense. She's the Band-Aid. That was something that Kayla McBride, a phrase that she used. The bailout option too. The reason Minnesota, they are the number one defense in the WNBA this season in terms of defensive rating. They have been from the very beginning. Of course, she is surrounded by great defenders, including on ball, Kayla McBride, Bridget Carlton, last year's Defensive Player of the Year, Nafisa Collier. But the way Alana Smith bails everyone out so that it doesn't look like there's any kind of miscue or mistake, it so much goes beyond just statistics. And of course, defense is already hard enough to quantify. But her especially, the work that she puts in, watching film, trying to predict what her opponents do, setting a new franchise record in blocks in a single season in Lynx history. That list goes on and on of what she's accomplished, but it is the little things that when you watch, you can appreciate the work and the effort and the smarts that go into who she is.
Hey, let me ask this. Is she a free agent at the end of this year?
That's a good question. I don't know officially off the top of my head here, Henry, and that's because basically everyone, I think all but maybe three players in the WNBA.
With the collective bargaining situation,
CBA coming up.
Yeah, yep. with the collective bargaining situation, it's interesting here how all of this is going to play out, but it looks as though, this would be, because I feel like she is a key contributor and a member of this team, that whatever happens in the CBA, we need to retain her services.
I mean, that's what's such a big unknown, Henry. I mean, they want this CBA, the players want this to be transformational. And, you know, maybe that means getting a bigger slice of the entire revenue pie in terms of the percentage that goes to players, maybe raising that ceiling for payment for the best players in the WNBA, which would affect players, certainly like Nafisa Collier and other Lynx players behind her after that. But that's also why there's this kind of sense of urgency about trying to win a championship this season, is because there are so many unknowns about where people could end up. I mean, I even think about someone, there's multiple Lynx players in this category who have raised their stock, but even someone like Jessica Shepherd, who could be starting on any team in the WNBA with the kind of numbers she puts up in starters minutes, a sixth player of the year candidate. So just one example of how, of course, players who win, who are this good, one of the most dominant regular seasons in recent memory in the WNBA, are going to be highly sought after.
All right, so Sloan, let me ask you this, because you know as much as I love the squad, I'm always going to call out things when I'm kind of like curious and like, what's happening here? What was going on that final possession that we had there before we turned the ball over? Was it just us not paying attention to the shot clock and getting into a set? What was going on there?
Well, that is something that we also, I think, need to ask Cheryl Reeve about as well to get further explanation, because it was kind of one of those, if you were watching it, I was too. I was, you know, funny enough, I talked about being at the home of the Sharks. My broadcast booth was actually in the penalty box. You had to open up the gate to walk into where I was sitting. So I had, a pretty good view of what was happening. And I think everyone's just kind of scratching their heads like, what happened? Did that just happen? Why did that just happen? To give the ball back with 4 seconds left and a potential chance to win the game on a final shot. It was, incredibly risky. And so I don't know exactly what happened there, but it was a 24-second shot clock violation. It appeared that there was some kind of confusion. And Golden State, they're one of the best defensive teams in the WNBA as well. They actually led the WNBA in opponent points per game, third in defensive rating, close behind Minnesota. And they were able to just swarm the ball and nothing happened with it.
Yeah, that was so curious to me how that went down. Courtney Williams was not really having that much of a good night, but she did hit a clutch jumper there late. Just talk about, like, how she doesn't let whatever happens during the course of a ball game faze her for the most part.
That's exactly it. She's completely unfazed. Her confidence never wavers, Henry, and I mean that absolutely. It never wavers, and that's not an exaggeration, where for her it's always the next shot going in, and that's her entire mentality every time she's on the court with just utmost confidence that is never rattled and never shaken by any means. In fact, Cheryl Reeve was making a joke throughout the season that she calls her Dory, like that character from Finding Nemo who has terrible short-term memory. And she says that is actually Courtney Williams because she does not remember all the shots that she missed. There were times earlier in the season where she might be 0-for-6 in the first half with 2 points and then end up having a 20-point game because she just kicks it into gear in the second half. So that's something that Minnesota has experienced this season. She's also had plenty of really hot starts as well, too, where she just is so good at getting into her rhythm, the exact shots that she wants, 15 to 19 feet, center of the court, kind of just inside the three-point line. And when she's able to do that off the bounce or stepping into a catch and shoot, it is so hard to stop because she knows her spots and gets to them, which has always been just a long recipe for success for her. But you're right, her, you just are not surprised where maybe she's not one of the focal points of a game, not really finding her stroke and her rhythm, but you're not surprised at all when she hits kind of a dagger shot like that.
Voice of the Lynx, Sloan Martin, joining us here on the Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. The Lynx had three players come off the bench last night to get time, Shepherd, Heidemann, and Carrington. Are we deep enough to win a WNBA championship?
Yes. And this is a Lynx team that, exactly as you said, is going 8 deep, sometimes 9, with a player from Russia, Maria Kliundikova, who brings great size. I feel like she is an underrated element, especially defensively. She can knock down threes. But that is maybe as good as it gets with a WNBA bench, where you have a player who last year in Carrington was all defensive team and was also most improved in the WNBA. And Heidemann and Shepherd have had their brilliant games, so many of them this season, the times that they have carried this team. They are both on the same team, teammates, 6 Player of the Year candidates. They should be 1 and 2, and I don't even know what order I would pick if I was a voter because of how magnificent they have been at various points throughout the season. For example, when Nafisa Collier missed 7 games in August when she had an ankle injury, during that time, Jessica Shepherd started for her, and she averaged 12 points and 11 rebounds per game, where she had nearly a triple-double in a single half at Indiana. She was 1 rebound shy of a triple-double, just the second in Lynx history. Of course, she did get that in order to secure it. So she has put up astronomical numbers. And then Tisha Heidemann, who is coming off a great game last night, she had had a stretch of 4 or 5 games scoring 20-plus points. She had a single 20-point game in her entire career, now in her 7th season, entering this season, actually entering about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then she has just been on a tear for the Minnesota Lynx. So you look at that group, and I still remember what Coach Reeves said when she brought in Dejanay Carrington about the different kind of elements she brings defensively, the different matchups and looks they can give, the versatility that she brings. And then she just finds the right spots to insert herself offensively. She has fit in seamlessly from the very start when she was traded midseason. So, I mean, the Lynx bench is just phenomenal. And that's what Coach Reeve really wanted in trying to win a championship with this group.
Series deciding Game 3 between New York and Phoenix. That takes place tomorrow night. Any preference?
You know, that's something that a lot of us on this last road trip were talking about. So Minnesota against the New York Liberty went 3-1 against them this season. And they were just, you know, able to eke out that last win back on August 19th. Minnesota also went 3-1 against the Phoenix Mercury, but I don't think in any of those games, Henry, they were entirely healthy and having their big three of Satu Sabally, of Kalia Copper, who's a former finals MVP and WNBA champion, and Alyssa Thomas, who is one of the most underrated players in the WNBA, and she actually finished, I believe, 4th in Defensive Player of the Year voting as well. And it's just an incredibly, incredibly tough competitor, led the WNBA in assists per game, and is by far the leader in career triple-doubles in WNBA history as well. So I think when you look at New York, they've obviously been hurt by injuries this year. They have had maybe the most starting lineups in the WNBA this season. But Breanna Stewart played that last game, a blowout loss in game two, on a sprained MCL in her knee. She said, I know the risk, but I want to be out there for my team. But she's clearly not 100%. So that's something that you might think about when it comes to a potential rematch here. Minnesota was fantastic, especially offensively against New York. I just don't know if the Liberty, and this is again saying I know injuries have been a factor for this team, I just have not seen this lethal mentality from them to just try and mow teams down and become back-to-back champions. I just have not detected that from them, where the Phoenix Mercury, it feels like they feel like they're overlooked, and they're just a feisty, scrappy, hardworking team, steals the ball, shoots the three well. Not a lot of people talk about their head coach, Nate Tibbetts, who also comes from an NBA background as well. So I think that Phoenix is that team that's maybe a little bit too overlooked. It's hard for me to say, Henry. I know it broke it all down right there, but I wonder if New York might be maybe a preference, even with experience and championship experience. But just from what I've seen this season, that might be it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Hey, Sloan, thanks so much for breaking it down, and good luck in round number two.
All right. Thanks, Henry. Anytime.
All right. Sloan Martin joining us here on The Lake Show. We'll do headlines. That's next here on the show. And let's dive into those headlines here on The Lake Show. Before the top of the hour, we'll get back to sports in a different way.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
But headlines now.
All right, let's get to it. H. Lake, some Minnesota State troopers are now patrolling at Minneapolis streets. This came at the request of Mayor Jacob Frey and city leaders who are trying to get a grip on mass shootings that have rocked the city in recent weeks. Police Chief Brian O'Hara says he's grateful for the extra patrols that began yesterday. Now, just this week, there were five people shot near the Metro Transit station at Lake Street and 35W late Monday morning. Then later Monday, another eight were shot near a homeless encampment in the Longfellow neighborhood of South Minneapolis. That shooting, that shut down in the area of the first shooting were known problem spots to the MPD, according to O'Hara. Now, Minneapolis has made progress in hiring more police officers, something the city has been trying to play catch up on since 2020. Now, he told Chad, while hiring is going good, they're still about a third of the number short of where they need to be. Minneapolis City Charter previously mandated a minimum of 731 sworn police officers, a number tied to the city's population and a target of the court-ordered lawsuit for the department to meet. Now, while the city charter still has the requirement, staffing levels have fluctuated due to retirements and officers leaving the MPD following the unrest in the wake of George Floyd's killing by former officer Derek Chauvin. Recent report in June 2025 showed the department has over 600 officers for the first time since 2023.
Couple things here. I got no issue with this at all. We definitely want and will take the assistance of the state troopers because we want crime to remain down, number one. Number two, that's impressive. They're doing a good job of adding officers to the force because the number is way, way low. For them to go back and get over 600, I think is doing a very good job.
It's trending in the right direction.
Yes.
Hey, Somerville, Massachusetts. This is a funny story because we all need to laugh. They crowned Minerva the Cat as its new bike path mayor after she received the most of the nearly 6,000 votes cast in an election. Minerva's one-word campaign slogan, crime, proved both cheeky and popular among locals. The viral mayor race featured 70 pet candidates. The cat mayoral race in Somerville, Massachusetts has come to an end. A bike path mayor for the community has been chosen. Now, the residents of the small town learned of their four-legged denizens. They'd rule over the Somerville community path as the bike path mayor. What started as an inside joke, it featured over 70 pet candidates, cats, a couple of dogs, and a few other pets. The sitting mayor is a three-year-old short-haired indoor-outdoor cat named Barry, who enjoys hanging out near the bike path, was appointed to the humorous role by his owner, Mallory Bissett, back in July. Move led to other pet owners to jokingly contest that their pets deserved a shot at the title as well. from this lighthearted local feed sprang an intense viral mayoral race that caught the attention of the nation, according to NBC 10. After a little over 2 weeks of voting, Minerva stood out again with her one-word campaign slogan, quote, crime.
Minerva. Anyway.
Hey, that was a...
That's funny.
It's a fun story. It really is.
The business one, I think, is interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's get to it. Customer visits to Cracker Barrel fell after intense backlash to its proposed logo change and renovation, company said in an earnings call. Traffic has fallen 8% since the chain initially changed its logo back on August 19th. Now, the old-timey chain recently scrapped major parts of its turnaround plan after right-wing backlash. It dropped its minimalistic logo last month, then halted restaurant remodels as well. They had planned to remodel the restaurant with a simpler layout, getting rid of some of the cluttier antiques in the layout, and including the knickknacks in the chain was known for. It said it had only completed 4 remodels of the 660 total locations by the time it paused the effort.
This was a non-controversy from the jump. Cracker Barrel, which I love. I probably go to Cracker Barrel maybe 3 or 4 times a year. They're negatively impacted by this. This is not Target. It's not a Target situation. But yet, you know, a lot of people felt a certain way. They have every right to feel however they want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't over a logo.
Over a logo.
It's dumb to begin with. Let's just state that. I'm not boycotting Cracker Barrel. If you want to, you have every right to. But I find it funny. I really do. I find it funny.
Companies go through rebranding all the time. They change their logos. They change their layout.
What was so woke about that?
Knickknacks.
Oh, man. Woof.
Knickknacks, man.
Oh, goodness.
I ain't got no empathy for knickknacks.
I love Cracker Barrel, though.
Cracker Barrel's good.
It's good stuff.
It's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
But if they want to change their logo, can't we allow them to rebrand? Do it all the time.
Evidently not. Coming up next, we need to be more careful with forcing sports coverage on fans. I'll explain that next on The Late Show.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.